I don't know how this is getting so fucked up. What is even happening?
Josh, do we need to send you back to document school?
Apparently. I don't know why it's formatting everything the same.
It's probably your tabs.
Probably my tabs. Why didn't I think about that?
Last episode, I had a really bad habit of scratching my beard right into the mic, so I'm going to try really hard not to do that this time.
I fixed it!
I'm so proud of you.
One, two, three,
oh, thank you. Thank you.
So get together, have a few laughs.
Uh-oh! Shit, lady, do I sound like I'm ordering a pizza?
Lady, put the freaking gun down on the ground right now. Take your shot across the freaking street and say it until he's gonna get you!
Hello, and welcome to Where There's a Willis, There's a Way, a film podcast about the multitude of works by Bruce Willis. My name is Josh Carter.
And I'm Kendrick Martin. Today we'll be covering North, directed by Rob Reiner and written by Alan Zwiebel. This movie stars Elijah Wood, Jason Alexander, and, of course, Bruce Willis. This is your first time listening to this podcast. What we do here is an in-depth breakdown of a movie starring Bruce Willis, both from a film perspective and his individual contribution. We add the movie to our rankings, we talk trivia, and then we do The Wheel of Willis.
Find our previous episodes at williswaypod.com. Find other podcasts in the Last of the Action Heroes podcast network over at lastoftheactionheroes.com. You can rate and review us on iTunes for your review to be read on air. So, before we dive too deep into this movie, go straight off the map in a direction.
Any direction.
What? In any direction. None specifically. What, what were your basic thoughts on the movie, Kendrick?
So, to give our listeners a little inside baseball look here, we looked at this movie and we saw that Bruce Willis played narrator. Mm-hmm. And Josh and I both said, if Bruce Willis just has a few lines at the beginning narrating the opening scene, we don't have time for that. Bruce Willis's IMDb list is way too long to stop for every time that he just does a little voiceover. So yeah. I popped into Amazon Prime streaming video and gave it a few minutes watch, and I was like, wow, this movie looks really funny, and Bruce Willis has more than just a few opening lines. So Josh, I think we should watch it. So I texted Josh back and I said, hey, let's give this movie a shot. And I watched it then, and I got about 30 minutes into watching it, and I was like, wow, this movie's really enjoyable. I should have started it over with my wife, because she likes funny 90s movies. And then I got to the end, and I really hated this movie.
At what point did you start hating it? Because you got a half an hour in, and you were liking it, right?
So, probably the 37th minute or something. I didn't look at the timestamp, but I paused it at a half an hour because I consciously thought, should I wait and watch this with her because she'll probably like it? But I didn't know if her schedule would work, and I was kind of like going back and forth, and I thought, well, I'll watch it, and then if we have to start it over, it's only 90 minutes. That's not too bad. And it was not long after that where I was like, oh, no. Oh, no, no, no.
That's funny. Yeah, I didn't mind this movie. I'm gonna be really counterculture and say I thought it was not amazing, but I thought it was all right. So
I
appear to be in the minority,
having cheated and having glanced at your Letterboxd list earlier and saw where you had rated this.
Uh huh.
So I knew we were gonna come at it from both sides of the Willis. So I'm gonna give this movie a Bruck, a BRUC out of Bruce Willis.
Yeah, I'm probably going to give this movie a Bruce W out of Bruce Willis.
Wow, all right, we got a little contention here.
Yeah, a two-letter difference.
Well, and a space. That space is important.
Oh, okay. All right, then I give it a Bruce space. I wasn't aware that the space was a part of it.
Well, you know, This, if it was just Bruce Willis, that'd be weird.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, so I give this movie a Bruce space.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Before we dive into the movie, there's a couple of topics I want to talk about, Willis-related. So there's there's a link over on Vulture that's been tweeted at me, emailed to me, texted to me a handful of times over the past few weeks. It came out on March 31st, so it's been out for a little while. We've just haven't had time to talk about it, and I'll include the link in the show notes. The title is The King of Geezer Teasers Inside Randall Emmett's Direct-to-Video Empire, Where Many Hollywood Stars Have Found Lucrative Early Retirement. It's written by Joshua Hunt, and again, I'll post the link in our show notes. But it goes into detail on why so many famous stars of the 90s are in really bad movies right now, and it's majorly thanks to this guy named Randall Emmett, who's kind of built a empire of direct to streaming movies because of their overseas gains. And so he goes into Steven Seagal, Val Kilmer, Bruce Willis, obviously is one of the bigger pulls because he just churns them out for maybe 7 minutes of airtime. But then, you know, there's John Travolta, there's Robert De Niro, Sylvester Stallone. There's a whole bunch of them, and it's been happening for a decade or so. But it was a really fascinating read on kind of like what is going on in Hollywood and like why this kind of one man has built this empire of like low budget, high return movies.
Mm-hmm.
That was just a fascinating read. Have you had a chance to read this article?
I haven't yet, no, but I definitely intend to once we're done with this episode.
Yeah, I also really like the cover photo. It's just like stylized drawing of all the action heroes I mentioned, kind of in this like caricature-esque gathering with their guns and action hero poses. It's pretty great. It's really fascinating, and we're still in the thick of stardom for Bruce Willis. I think his best movies are still yet to come in our journey. So we haven't gotten there yet, but it'll be interesting to see kind of the rise and fall or rise and plateau of what his work is. A couple other news stories that I saw popularized this week, and this isn't anything new necessarily, but we talked recently, I think in a bonus episode, on what Bruce Willis would play if he was in the Marvel Universe. And we thought like the big bad would be kind of a fun way to see him. And there's an article on WeGotThisCovered.com that mentions an interview with Kevin Smith, who kind of theorizes that Bruce Willis would make a great Silver Surfer. So, little backstory, Disney Marvel acquired all the comic book stories from Fox when they kind of merged those studios. And so they're able to incorporate classic Fox stories that we've seen movies produced by Fox into the Marvel universe. And so there's already been that Fantastic Four versus the Silver Surfer movie that came out several years ago. It wasn't very good, but the Silver Surfer character is kind of like a emotionless pawn of a bigger bad named Galactus. And I'm no comic book historian here, so if I misspeak, please correct me. But the Silver Surfer plays kind of an emotionless pawn who just kind of goes in and does destruction until the Fantastic Four or whatever hero is determined kind of convinces him that he needs to change his ways. And so Bruce Willis playing kind of an emotionless just force of nature would fit some of his recent performances. I mean, we just watched Cosmic Sin, and we talked about how kind of low energy he was as he just kind of moved through that movie. But I think that would give him kind of a little bit of space to spread through the the range there, and I think it would challenge him a little bit, which I think would be interesting.
Yeah. Although it wouldn't be a singing role, sadly.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder what his singing career is like. Like, do you think he sings for his kids at home?
I would guess so, but that's just based on, like, my dad, because he would sing every once in a while, just because he's a person, and people sing, so.
True. Yeah. I didn't have a record deal in the 80s, but I still sang around the house, so that's a good point.
One thing that we did want to do is we wanted to shout out some people who had sent in some Wheel of Willis suggestions, so Hannah and Katie both sent in suggestions, so we wanted to give you our deepest thanks. Because our Wheel of Willis was just going to be one little thing that was going to rotate around in a circle. And now we have actual suggestions on there. So we definitely appreciate that. If anybody else wants to send us in anything, you can email us at williswaypod@gmail.com. Or you can tweet at us by tweeting at williswaypod. And then you can also find us on the Last of the Action Heroes Podcast Network Facebook page, since we're a part of a big old group that covers a lot of different movies. So if you like James Bond and listening to drunk people talk about it, there's a podcast for that. There's one that goes over Rocky, every single minute of a Rocky movie. So there's one on that. So they got a lot of different stuff. Definitely check them out. Now we're going to go north.
North.
The one thing that we cannot control in this life is who our parents are. You dealt the hand, you're stuck with it.
Pants, that's what I know. I know pants. All kinds of pants.
Please,
all kinds of pants.
Today, let me tell you something.
Mom! It's not like baseball, where if you don't like the deal you have with one team, you can become a free agent and try to get a better deal with another team.
Free agency.
If you want my advice, go home, make up, and goodbye.
What a scoop!
I could become a free agent. Going around offering services as a devoted son to the highest bidding set of parents.
I'm proud of you, kid. You got a lawyer?
Let's get cracking.
If he is not physically in the arms of either his new parents or his original parents by noon on Labor Day, he will be remanded to an orphanage. And if any of you has ever seen the little rascals, you know that's no day at the beach.
So North was on his way to find the perfect parents.
Well, hey, howdy, North.
I know what you're thinking. Big call, right? Everything I own is the biggest and the best. That's why we'd like you to become our son.
Here you go, North. Nice cup of hot cocoa. And to go with that, our state dish, Eskimo pie.
Well, hey, what do you know? The salmon are running.
Sure, living in Paris would be great. But there's always a hitch. Meanwhile, things were heating up at home.
Just because you were born 25 years before me doesn't make you smart. It doesn't make you right. It just makes you old.
Aren't I naughty?
It just makes you smell worse in the morning.
You realize North will never pull this off.
He's North. He can do anything.
That audio was from the trailer for North. I'm going to read the description from IMDb. The description is as follows. Sick of the neglect he receives from his mom and dad, a young boy leaves home and travels the world in search of new parents. Yeah, that description is, like, way better than the trailer is, because the trailer is like, we don't know what this movie is! It's so succinct there in IMDb, so, you know, they should have taken a note from them. You can find this movie for rent on VOD. You can also find it on Amazon Prime as of now. Although, as we have learned, the Look Who's Talking rule is just because it's on there when we watched it does not mean it will be on there when you go back to watch the second one. Or the second time. Or the first time.
For the second time.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, all that stuff.
I actually think it's only going to be on Amazon Prime for a few more days, so it's good that this was serendipitous. Unless we just really cause a boom of North Watch.
Yeah, that's entirely possible. entirely possible, but unlikely. We are also going to be spoiling this movie, so if you really, really care about North, then I guess don't listen to the rest of this until you've watched the movie. But I give it a Bruce Space. So, and once you hear me give a little bit more of a pitch about it, you might have a little bit of an idea. The reason why I give it a Bruce Space is because I think that it's a pretty charming family movie. It's not like going to blow your socks off or anything like that. And if you hate family movies already, you're not going to like this movie. But if you do like family movies, no, you might like it.
Counterpoint, I love family movies and I was downright offended.
Classic. Classic. Yeah. But yeah, we're going to be spoiling the movie from here on out. So that this has been your warning.
And while that said, I don't know, the best parts of this movie don't like, you can't really spoil them. The ending is a little bit of a twist and we'll talk about that in a little bit cuz it's my least favorite part of this movie, but I just like fast forwarded through different parts once I had watched it to show my wife, because I was like, look, this movie isn't worth watching, but here's some funny moments that you can watch just to like revel in the WTF of it all.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. It also helps that this movie is divided up into like pretty clean sections. So I feel like we could pretty easily talk about each section individually. So kind of the gist of this movie is that the kid, Elijah Wood, his character's name is North. He is tired of his parents because he feels like they don't appreciate him very much. And his like feelings on that are pretty much right. And he is like trying to make up his mind about if he wants to like leave home, because he has this conversation with Bruce Willis, who's in a bunny suit. And he's like, it's not like you're playing baseball, kid, where you can just go be a free agent. And then he's like, because the kid also plays baseball. So it all ties in pretty nicely for him. So he sits in a chair and he thinks about it. And then we cut to him deciding that he's going to leave his parents and go look for new parents. So that's kind of like the first little setup of this movie. And then from there, there's like individual parts of the movie that once I learned that it's based on a book, I was like, oh, that makes tons of sense. Because each of these sections feels like a chapter. And it does like little mini adventures throughout the rest of the movie.
So up until those adventures start, I was 100% on board with this movie. His parents are played by Jason Alexander and Julie Louise Dreyfus, which this came out kind of right in the middle of Seinfeld's run. Seinfeld ran from 89 to 98, I believe. I don't have it in front of me, but I believe that's when it was. So this was like right in the smack of that. And their stuff is very over the top, very silly. It's almost like it was pulled from a Seinfeld sketch. Jason Alexander playing his dad is a pants inspector. He's inspector number 6, I believe. And he has like a pocket full of the little like inspected by number 6 things. And I thought that was super funny. And you go, you see his office where everybody, all the inspectors have like different configurations to test out pants. So like, I think he's golfing. And so he's like bending over and his office looks like a putting green. The guy next to him has like
lumberjack
Jewish
stuff.
Attire.
And oh,
he's like doing rabbinical work. And then the other guy is like a lumberjack and they're trying on different clothes. It's just very silly and very over the top. And I thought it was all super funny. I love Seinfeld. I'm a huge Seinfeld fan. Grew up watching that show. And he's very much like channeling George Costanza in this. Complaining about the littlest things and the littlest slights are all like extremely energetic complaints. And so I loved all that. I also really enjoy well done stories of kids who are just completely pretending to be adults. And this movie has a lot of that in the beginning. So North kind of traveling around school and he talks to different people who are helping him. And then there's the what I guess I would call the antagonist of this film, the he's like the newspaper editor for the school. I don't remember what's his name.
Winchell. He's like a middle schooler too.
Yeah, Winchell. Yeah, he looks like the swarmiest little butt. And when he's at the beginning, he's just a newspaper man, and he's like, "I've got my sources. I'll help you out, kid. Come here, make it big with me." and I thought it was all like super great, and I loved watching. I thought the kids seemed, I thought the kids all seemed fairly well directed. This is directed by Robert Reiner, which we'll get to later about like why this is a weird low point in a fairly stellar career of his. But yeah, 100% on board with all that. I love seeing Bruce Willis narrates the opening of the movie, and then when you see him in a bunny suit, I was like, oh yeah, this movie's going to be great. And like you said, so the premise of this movie is that North is unappreciated by his parents, and they go to detail showing these little vignettes of North is like an exceptional student. He's a great baseball player. He does theater. He's super friendly. He helps out people. He does all this stuff, and he's well respected in basically all areas, except when he goes home, his parents are too busy complaining about work to talk to him. So he has like a genuine complaint from this aspect of this story, which makes sense because this movie was definitely, I believe, a kid's movie. I'm not sure what the marketing was at the time. I had never heard of it growing up, and I would have been like perfect age for this. So I don't know why it just like completely passed me over. Yeah, what did you think of the opening bit there?
Yeah, I thought the opening was great. I was immediately on down. I was immediately on board slash down with the opening. I was immediately down board. I thought that the like opening of it feels kind of like whimsical and fairy tale-ish. It almost has like a feeling of like Hook or Home Alone, stuff along that line right at the beginning. It quickly goes just absolutely bonkers, but I thought that the beginning is pretty charming, and when Bruce Willis shows up in a bunny suit, it's just like the best moment of my day. It's so good.
Yeah, I would kind of categorize this along with Hook exactly. Hook is probably by far my favorite movie of that setup, but I'm thinking of like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, or Beethoven, or those other kind of mid-90s silly movies. I'm thinking of, do you remember, I cannot remember the name of it. It was a Disney movie, I believe, where, I think it was called Tall Tales. Are you familiar with this movie?
Is it a movie about mice?
No, that's Five Will Goes West. Tall Tales and Legends, maybe? See what IMDb says. Nope. So this, I'm sure someone will write in and let us know. This story was basically like a kid was going to have his house taken away from him or something like that. And he awakens like all the famous American tall tales to come save him. So Paul Bunyan and Pecos Bill are the two I remember. And then I think maybe there's a couple others.
Is Davy Crockett in it as well?
Possibly. I just remember, Paul Davy Bunyan. Crockett. And Pecos Bill, because Pecos Bill, I believe, like lassos a tornado.
Maybe I've seen a different movie then.
But anyway, I have fond memories of that movie, but I think it would be pretty bad if I were to rewatch it. I'm not sure if I would be as offended by it as I was this movie, but we'll get into that in a little bit here. But
yeah. So from there, the perfectly charming opening, it goes into him deciding to leave, and he like meets this lawyer character, which, like, as far as the vocal performance goes, is one of my favorite parts of the entire movie. Like, he goes around talking like this, and he's just, like, got briefcases with papers flying everywhere. Like, that sort of, like, not put together type of guy, but he talks like he's, like, in an old-timey production, and that's hilarious. The entire courtroom scene where he tries to prove that his parents don't really want him anymore and he has a right to new parents if he chooses is also pretty ridiculous. And then it kind of, that chapter ends with him deciding that, or him getting the verdict from the court that since it's the beginning of July and school's gotten out, he has until Labor Day weekend or Labor Day at noon in order to find a new set of parents or return to his old parents. And he has to be in their arms by noon in order for the court ruling to be official, or he has to go to an orphanage. So that's kind of like the end of that little segment of movie. And that's totally laden with puns and stuff like that, but it's ridiculous. But what do you think about that?
You're referring to John Lovitz, who played Arthur Belt, the attorney. And then Alan Arkin plays the judge. And I totally agree that John Lovitz was hilarious. He's got a very recognizable voice. He's been in a lot of movies. And on Saturday Night Live, he's very, very funny. And then, of course, Alan Arkin... also, you know, great. Been in a lot of stuff. A lot of TV, a lot of movies. Wonderful. One of my favorite lines that I wrote down, and it never occurred to me, like, how this is supposed to be. Or maybe I don't... I've never been in a courtroom setting, so I'm not sure what actually happens here. But when court begins and the bailiff says, "All rise," and then everybody rises, and then he goes, "All sit." I was like crying in laughter at just this guy going, "All sit."
"All rise for judge, blah, blah, blah." Yeah. "All sit for judge, blah, 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 blah." Yeah, yeah, so I was silly. Also losing it.
So silly. Yeah. Again, still on board. Still on board at this point. This point where I was like, well, no, it was the next chapter that really made me wish that I had brought my wife in. But
yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So immediately he gets a bunch of letters with other parents being like, "Oh, we want to interview North and be his parents and stuff like that." And so then he goes on to a bunch of little adventures to go around the world and around the U.S. and see if he wants to be a part of their family. So immediately he goes to Texas, and in Texas there's like a... super, super ridiculous, over-the-top Texas caricature. And two of them. There's Ma Tex and Pa Tex. And they're played by Dan Aykroyd and Reba McEntire. And they are so over-the-top and so silly. There's a dance number. And it's wild.
I thought this was all wonderful. I love Reba McEntire, listened to a lot of her music growing up. The dance and singing part was really funny. This is where the budget really kind of starts to show in a few ways. Like some of the exterior shots, they appear to be either in Texas or in somewhere that appears to be like Texas plains. Like they're definitely kind of out in the West, but.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the, like, "This is a house," definitely did not look like a house. It looked like a piece of wood kind of propped up, and I was like, But I mean, I don't fault that on this movie. It's definitely it's got the, like, National Lampoon-esque set of quality, or maybe like a Christmas comedy where you just kind of ignore the fact that nothing looks like it makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so... he's like, "I think that I do want to be a part of this family." Oh, and like the Astros, the baseball team, gets signed over to this kid, North, and by Dan Aykroyd's character, he's like, "I bought them for you, son." He's like, "I don't know." And then it turns out that they had a kid before, and that kid like died in a horrible death, and they're just trying to replace him, basically. And then he's thinking about it, and then he meets Bruce Willis again, who is playing a different character, who's like a ranch hand for them, and he has like a heart-to-heart talk with the kid, and then North decides that this isn't the family that he's looking for. And I loved all of this, and then I also immediately knew what the rest of the movie was going to be, or so I thought. I thought it was going to be go to location, make fun of that location. He meets a Bruce Willis who's not a Bruce Willis, and then he learns something, and then he goes to a different place. And I thought that it was just going to keep happening until he realized that his own family was what he wanted. And I wasn't too far off the mark. However, I did not anticipate the places that they were going to go, and that was a big problem.
Yeah. So while this is happening, we keep getting flashbacks back to... or not flashbacks, but cuts back to home... which I don't know if they ever explicitly say. I kind of assumed at the beginning he was in like a New York suburb, but I don't think that's true. Do you know where his home, quote unquote, is? Is it maybe Washington? Because they talk about the Smithsonian at one point, but
I don't know.
Yeah. So they keep going back there and showing you that while North is traveling around, I think he's given 10 weeks, I believe is his total. He has like all summer. I don't remember the total number of weeks, but he has quite a while. And he back home, Wenchel and the John Lovett's attorney are basically becoming like Donald Trump-esque politicians by just wheeling and dealing. And at some point it felt a little like a fascist regime is rising, and I was this is kind of weird for a kid's movie. Like, are we supposed to be on the side of the kids here? Basically all these kids are like, yeah, parents, why do you treat us like trash? You're the real trash. You're old and smelly. And there's like riots and parents are running around in fright.
There's like a poster that gets strapped down behind like the lead kid that's like in gray and has like big red stripes on it. It looks very Nazi-esque, and you're like, oh my god, what is going on?
Yeah, maybe that would hit a little differently if you didn't have like actual Nazi groups in America today. Trying to do like if we didn't have to deal with fascists on a regular basis, it might be funnier. But I was just like, yeesh.
Yeah.
I don't. This isn't helping. And so there's that kind of subplot going on while North travels around to his different locations. I enjoyed all the Texas stuff. And I enjoyed Bruce Willis here. We'll talk about him more in a little bit, but I was pretty on board with it up until here. After this, he goes to Hawaii, and here's where I started to question what this movie was doing. So he goes to Hawaii, and he has he's met by the governor of Hawaii, who basically brings him on to I don't know what island they're on, but he brings him kind of to a luau and shows him around Hawaii and is like, here's everything, isn't it great, and Hawaii is so awesome. And here's where I felt like the characterization, so Texas, I felt like you can make an easy kind of, you can poke fun at Texas because Texas like is admittedly that they the biggest thing about the Texas characters, Ma and Pa Tex, is everything has to be the biggest and the best. So their limo is like 7 limos long, and they have to
so
eat like
long.
They have to eat like 6 plates worth of food because they have to be the biggest and all this stuff. And I thought that was kind of like eye-rolly, but
and everybody's got guns, and all of the handles on the limo itself
are guns, exactly. And of course, like they talk about, you know, digging for oil and and rodeos and all the stuff that Texas people talk about. And that was kind of like funny on the surface, but I didn't feel like it was offensive in any way as far as the caricature goes. But then when it gets to Hawaii, it started to like raise some flags, and then it gets to Alaska after Hawaii. And that's where I was like, okay, I'm not on board with what you're doing anymore. But Hawaii, it had some pretty funny jokes, and I thought that the joke, all the writing felt very pointedly funny, and that's not normally the kind of comedy I like, where it's like someone is just reading a script of kind of one-liner jokes. But I thought some of it worked, some of it didn't work. You know going into this that North isn't going to find like, he's not going to want to stay with the Texas family, he's not going to want to stay with any of these families, because that would just mean the movie ends in the first 30 minutes, but they all kind of made a compelling case. They weren't like mistreating him in any way. It was kind of like they all gave him legitimate reasons to be like, hey, here, come live here. This would be a fun place to live. Come do this. And yes, they all have their reasons for their own selfish gain. I know this is a kid's movie, but North lives in like a huge home somewhere on the East Coast, and he has a pretty cush lifestyle, even though his parents maybe don't pay attention to him. The fact that he's kind of like annoyed that all these other families have hidden agendas for why they want him, I was like, what message are we telling our kids here? Like, should they just demand perfection and nothing less? I don't know, but maybe I'm looking for too deep of a message in a kid's movie. What did you think of the Hawaii scenes?
Yeah, I thought that those were starting to push buttons. I was like, the Texas stuff is funny because you're generally punching up or you're punching sideways.
Yeah.
And like America and Texas, not in specific, but Texas is included in this, has a pretty bad history of colonialization, pushing away native peoples, taking their stuff, putting them on some land somewhere and being like, all right, fuck you guys. And in Texas, they're making fun of the people that did that, or whose ancestors did that. And I'm like, all right. And then in Hawaii, they're like making fun of native Hawaiians like the whole time. And I think that by having them be rich Hawaiians who are the governor and the governor's wife, I think that's a thing that plays into that script's favor, because you're still kind of punching up. You have to be a little bit more careful because you're doing it to a native culture that has been oppressed and conquered. But they're still technically punching up. And then once they go to Alaska, it's just like the punching up has completely stopped. They're doing nonstop punching down, just making fun of Eskimos the entire time. And at first you're kind of like, oh, this is kind of clever. They're mowing their lawn, but it's ice. So they're just mowing over ice and all of the fences that they have, because they have like a picturesque, like suburban neighborhood, but all the fences are made out of ice. They have a garage door that opens and closes and it's made out of ice. So all that stuff I was fine with. And then you just get into so many offensive jokes, and it's like, oh, I don't think this was such a good idea. Alan, what's your face?
Yeah, so the stuff in Hawaii was kind of interesting because the people playing Hawaiians, as far as I can tell, are actually Hawaiians. So the people who play the governor, Governor Ho, his name is Keon Young, and he was born in Hawaii. There's not much information on the woman who plays his wife, but when you get to Hawaii, it's Kathy Bates playing an Eskimo who's definitely not native Alaskan. And that where I was like, this is going sideways. There are plenty of like cities and communities in Hawaii that you could, or in Alaska, that you could have just set that in. You didn't need to kind of poke fun at native communities. I was also kind of rolling my eyes because it was the summertime and Alaska is fairly like green and lush in the summertime.
I didn't even think about that.
Parts that are cold, but it's not like that in any way. I don't know if you know the story of Balto, you know, the famous like dog sled race to get the medicine across Alaska. In the summertime, you can just ride a mountain bike on that same path, and that's like a different race. So it's a very different place in the summertime, but hey, it's Alaska. I did enjoy the when North gets to Alaska, they land the plane in because the runway is so icy, the plane just skids right off the runway and just keeps on going down the road to like, Juneau. So they go from Alaska to Juneau.
And they from come Anchorage back. To Juneau, yeah.
Yeah, from Anchorage to Juneau. And then they come back and they like bump into the terminal. So I was like, oh, this is going to be kind of a funny tour of America. See all that America has to offer. Kind of poke fun at different, you know, elements of America, but in a lighthearted way. And you know, we're kind of calling out like kind of some insensitive moments, and they were shorter lived, and there are much worse examples of this. I just think it kind of left a bad taste in my mouth. One thing I will give credit to that I thought was kind of a funny conceit that they used here was, so North has, like we said, like 4 months essentially to do this. And he's in Alaska and they take a dog sled to the ocean.
For offensive reasons.
Yeah. Yeah. We're not even going to talk about that. But at the end, he's like, they're like, okay, you only got like a week left. You got to pick your folks. And he was like, a week? And he's like, yeah, it took you 7 weeks to do that dog sled. The sun just never went down or whatever. I thought that was kind of funny. I was like, no wonder I ate lunch 49 times or whatever.
Yeah. I actually laughed out loud and I had to pause it because I was laughing so hard at that part.
Yeah. Because it was really funny.
Yeah, if you've ever seen, like, Emperor's New Groove, when they're like, how did you guys beat us here at the very end? And then they're like, by all accounts, it doesn't make sense. And they show the map, and it does not add up at all. But the plot says, must take 6 weeks or 7 weeks.
Yeah.
And so then it does. It was one of those moments, and it was chef's kiss, as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm. I love, like, self-referential humor like that. I thought that was really well done.
Yep.
And so then after that, it just kind of goes downhill for me. So they kind of fast forward through several really brief stints all around the world, getting progressively more and more racist and insensitive as they travel to different communities. So they go from China to Paris.
I will say that the China one wasn't as bad as it could have been considering the time and what else this movie did. They make fun of a haircut, which is not great. But that was it, thankfully. And I was like, oh, thank God. Thank God. This could have been so much worse.
Yeah, I was concerned that it was going to, like, either... Like, they kind of did some interesting, like, references to pre-communist China. But it was very fast. And I was like, I'm not sure what they're trying to say here. But then they just moved on. Mm-hmm. And then the Paris one was just kind of a silly, like, French people... humor.
Yeah, French people being French.
One of the things I did enjoy was how everywhere he travels, he's immediately covered in local garb. So when he goes to Texas, he's given like a cowboy hat and cowboy boots and all that stuff. And then when he goes to Paris, he's wearing like a beret and handed a cigarette. I thought that was funny. And then he goes to Zaire, which doesn't even exist anymore as a country.
Yeah.
It's now the Democratic Republic of Congo. But, yeah. So, African village, you can probably imagine how offensive a 30-second scene in an African village could be. all that said, then he comes back to America, and he has, like, one final visit with a family in upstate New York.
Mm-hmm.
And... here's where I kind of felt like I lost a little bit of what they were trying to say. So, as we've already talked about, the basic premise of this movie is he doesn't like his family. So he travels around, and as he travels around, he comes to realize that his family was really like, he does love his family. He wants to go back, because all these other families like aren't his family. And then he goes to this, family in upstate New York that seems to be like the perfect family for him. And I don't know why he turns them down. Like, he hasn't, at this point, he hasn't had any contact with his parents because they've been in a coma.
Mm-hmm.
And so it doesn't, I don't know, like, why for plot reasons he would say, like, no, this isn't for me. Other than he just, like, isn't happy. I'm not sure where.
Yeah,
this I got just the kind sense of felt that, like, a, well, we gotta get there somehow.
Yeah, I do get that, but I also feel like they were trying to show that because it wasn't his actual family, it was like an approximation for him, but it wasn't real enough for him, and he wanted something that felt more genuine.
The dad of that family is played by John Ritter, but did you know that the daughter was
John Ritter.
Scarlett Johansson?
Yeah, Hannah had to tell me that. She was, like, when we were watching it, she goes, oh, you know the daughter. And I was like, there's no way I've not seen this little girl in anything. She's like, oh, you've seen her in a lot of things. And I was like, And she's like, red hair, wears, like, skin-tight catsuit. And I was like, what the hell?
Yeah,
this is a little tiny
later.
Child. I've never seen this. Oh, my God, it's Scarlett Johansson. What?
Yeah. She's had 49 lunches since then.
Apparently so. I was, like, in my mind, because I've seen Elijah Wood in so many things where he looks like a baby, and to be fair, he still looks like a baby, and Scarlett Johansson is, like, a superhero. In my mind, she was older than he was, but obviously that is not the case.
Yeah, interesting. I wonder who Elijah Wood will play when he gets to a Marvel movie.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe he'll just play Frodo again. They'll figure out some way to make the rights work.
Small aside, did you see the Space Jam 2 trailer?
I did, but I haven't watched the first one, so...
Oh, well, they basically Ready Player One the Space Jam story.
Yeah. What else did I see? Was it like Iron Giant was in the trailer for Space Jam? Is that right?
Completely bastardized the Iron Giant story.
Yep.
And Gandalf is in that. That's where.
Oh, wild. Yeah. I watched the trailer, but like on a TV from a little bit of ways, and I was like, oh, Iron Giant. Wow, this movie looks like a lot. And that was about it, so... I don't remember anything else from it, really.
Yeah.
And then, so he spends time with that family, and then he's like, I don't want to be with this family anymore. I want to go maybe find my regular family. I don't know. I'm still trying to think about it. And then his parents wake up from their coma, and that one kid... Winchell has just become like full on evil corporation, like Lex Luthor, in the time that like kids have risen up and like told their parents who to vote for. And so now, like, that one lawyer or attorney from the beginning is now a senator. And it is just so, so campy. But his parents wake up and they're like, oh, we really miss our son. And then that one character, Winchell's like, oh, I understand. However, if he doesn't want to come back to you, there is another kid out there named Hugh that you could adopt instead. And they're like, no, we don't want Hugh. Hugh is not our son. Or Hugh, I don't remember what they said, but they said something about Hugh not being theirs, or they don't want Hugh or whatever. And then, of course, they cut that bit and send it to Elijah Wood's character. And so now he thinks that his parents don't want him anymore. And he's like, well, I also am depressed, so I'm going to leave the John Ritter family and the ScarJo family and then go try to find out what I want to be on my own. So he leaves them and he goes to New York. And I thought that that was maybe a little odd, but for plot-related reasons, it had to happen. So it did.
Yeah, and like I said earlier, the fascist kid plot stuff like didn't really work for me. I really liked that kid at the beginning when he was playing the newspaper guy. I thought he was funny and didn't feel forced. But the more we saw him, the more I felt like he was just reading his lines and like a robot actor. He wasn't working for me.
He worked for me, but I think that he might not have worked for most other people either, because he didn't do a whole lot of acting. Like, he doesn't even have a picture on IMDb.
Oh, wow. So after this was like his thing?
Yeah. He did like a few other things, but that was it. Like, the last thing that he did was in 2000.
Interesting.
Yeah. Apparently he was on Seinfeld, though.
Wow.
He played a kid on it.
That's funny. And then the movie goes on to the ending, where after North is chased all around town, shot at, attacked. Bruce Willis, of course, playing the Guardian Angel character, dropping in here and there. There's a couple, like, I don't know if it was me or what, but there's a couple plot holes that I was really confused about. One of which, so his parents were in a coma, and they were on display in a museum in their coma,
Mm-hmm.
And they wake up and they're like, we want to see our son. And the Winchell kid is like, certainly. And he wheels in like replicas. But why? Like, they still told North what was up. It wasn't like a surprise to him.
Well, so his original plan was to have the North still not choose to go with his original parents, because then kids would be more likely to not want to leave their parents, and then parents would be able to actually discipline their kids without fear of them leaving.
Sure.
And then he would lose all of his leverage and power. So he had to continue to convince the public that his parents, or that those parents were still knocked out and in a coma. And he had to convince North simultaneously to also not want his old parents back.
So it was just for the sake of convincing the public. That wasn't That wasn't obvious to me.
Yep. Yeah, that's what I thought that it was. Yeah, and then the finale of the movie is that
Jesse Smollett? Smollett? Something like that?
Yeah.
I don't know who you're talking about.
Jesse Smollett. He is like, psst, hey, North, here's the real tape. And then the real tape is basically like, oh, we love our son. We don't want this other kid named Hugh. We want our son. Blah, 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 blah. And then he goes, oh, man, I have to get back to my parents. And it's the day before Labor Day, so I have to get back in their arms by noon tomorrow. And so some hijinks ensue. He tries to get a plane ride back. He can't because he's supposedly dead, and they don't let dead people fly on planes, apparently.
Of course,
yeah. That's what's known as the death becomes her rule of airlines. So, and so then he like goes to Bruce Willis again as he like Bruce Willis is driving a FedEx truck, and then it's like one of my favorite exchanges between him and the Bruce Willis character where he's like, "Oh, you're my guardian angel," and he's like, those who get packages delivered to them from FedEx might think that we're angels, but we're just regular delivery guys. And I loved it. I liked that a lot. And so then the kid gets shipped all the way to his parents' house, which would have been a lot more impactful if we knew where he lived in the first place. I'll admit that readily.
Yeah.
But he gets shipped there, and it's seen as this incredible feat. And he has like 10 minutes to go find his parents, who are back at the mall where he had gone at the beginning of the movie to go sit and think. So he has 10 minutes to run all the way across town. Yeah. And go there. And as he's running there, you get like a nice little recap of all of the things that he did earlier. Because earlier when he went to this hiding spot, he was shown like thinking about things, and they showed all of the action of climbing through the trees, riding his bike at the beginning. And then it's all done like in fast motion because he's just running. It's not artificially sped up or anything. It's just shots of him running there. And at the place where he's going, the judge is there, and he's got like a giant clock to give a ruling at noon if he's not with his parents. Which makes me laugh because, like, in theory, he could have said that he went and found some other parents and the judge wouldn't know. So I don't know why the judge is there, but it worked for me. It was a bit of silliness that I accepted. And as he's running to go be with his parents, the guy who was trying to shoot at him from earlier, who's like a goon of the fascist kid, he's got his gun and he's got one bullet left, and so he shoots at North as North is running to jump into his parents' arms right before noon. And I was like, I don't know where this movie's gonna go from here. Is somebody gonna die right now? What the hell's happening? And then the big plot twist comes. It turns out that North,
hear my big inhale.
It turns out that when North had been sitting down in that chair at the beginning of the movie, he fell asleep, and it was all a dream.
Although, I was lamenting this to my wife, because she walked in at the very end, and because I told her, like, hey, you should watch this movie, and then she didn't have time, and then she walked in at the end, and I was like, you made the right choice. I was like... so mad that it ended with it all being a dream. And I explained the plot to her, and she goes, what were you expecting to happen? Like, how else could this have ended? And I was like, well, all right, gotta hand it to you. I don't know what other direction it could have gone. But
yeah. It went in so many bonkers directions. Like, there's no way to end this movie otherwise, I don't think.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah. So, I had actually theorized that it was going to be a dream by about Alaska or so. I was like, there's no way that this is real. Like, once he had that conversation with, oh, I guess that's why I stopped for lunch 49 times. I was like, no. No. So, I had been thinking that it was a dream for a while. Which also in universe kind of makes me laugh, because that means that this kid is like really racist against the Republic of Congo, just in his own imagination, which is a bummer, but also like very, very silly. And it does make a lot of the rest of the movie make more sense once you realize it is a dream. However, if you are not anticipating it, I could definitely see that being disappointing.
Okay. Any other, do you want to talk about anything else about the movie overall before we move on to trivia?
I don't think so. Oh, one thing I will say is that maybe this is helping me judge this movie unfairly, but this movie has a lot of puns, and I am a really big fan of puns, and so it is possible that I have rated this movie higher than it deserves based on its pun alone. Based on its pun level.
So, I agree. I really love puns. If it hadn't been as funny as it would, I would have rated this movie a lot worse. I thought the it all being a dream is like my biggest cinema sin. Any movie that ends with that loses most of its credit. So that really rubbed me the wrong way.
Oh yeah,
as silly as this movie was, it really rubbed me the wrong way. So. Here, kind of wrapping up, it's weird that, so one of the biggest things that you find when you read about this movie is it's on Roger Ebert's like most hated movies of all time list, and it's weird that he takes such an offense to this, because like there are many worse movies, there are many worse Bruce Willis movies that we've talked about. I mean,
oh yeah,
this is no Mortal Thoughts.
No, Bonfire of the Vanities.
Yeah, or Bonfire of the Vanities. Both of them, I thought, were worse movies than this. Many, many other movies we've talked about are worse than this. But I think it's maybe because Rob Reiner had... Well, really, everybody. This movie has like a fairly well-regarded cast, and it's based on a book. So why... What brought it to... what brought it to this place? Like it's unclear. Like it didn't win, so it wasn't like a cash cow. It wasn't like a summer comedy blockbuster or anything. So Rob Reiner has directed, you know, great hits like This Is Spinal Tap, Stand By Me, Princess Bride, When Harry Met Sally.
I specifically want to call out When Harry Met Sally, because that's like one of my favorite films of all time. It's in like my top 10 list for sure.
Yeah. And he's directed quite a few movies and acted in quite a few movies. So, I wonder if maybe that's why Roger Ebert took major offense to him. Side note, I didn't know this, although it makes complete sense, but Carl Reiner is Rob Reiner's dad.
Like, oh yeah.
I should have realized that, but it didn't occur to me.
Yeah, Carl Reiner played the grandpa in the like live reading of The Princess Bride that they did for the, I think it was like the Georgia Democratic Party or whatever. You didn't have to, you didn't have to donate anything to it, but you could see all of the original cast or most of the original cast coming back and doing a reading of the movie. And so he played the grandpa and then Rob Reiner played the kid. And it was great.
That's funny.
It was so good.
Carl Reiner, one of the greats, RIP.
Oh, yes.
Also, Oceans crossover, Oceans series crossover.
Yep.
We've already talked about Oceans movies, I think, once on this. Yeah, what did you think of Roger Ebert's review?
Yeah, I think that it's... This movie just kind of seemed like the movie to hate. And if you go around reading on, like, Letterboxd or Rotten Tomatoes, everybody is just, like, totally got to stick up their butt about this movie. And it's like, it is a family movie slash a kids movie, and I think that you guys are thinking a little bit too hard about it. If you don't like it, that's fine, but, like, just say, oh, I didn't like it. The end. I don't know that I have just railed against a movie that is so simple before, and this movie isn't super complicated. Like, a complicated movie, you could have a really nuanced take, you could have a lot of different problems with it, you could have all sorts of different critiques of it, but a simple movie like this, it's just either, did it work for you, did it not, are there some things that worked, other things that didn't, sure, okay, but overall, like, it just seems so weird.
I wonder, maybe when we write our grand book on 90s Hollywood that we'll write someday, Josh, but I think of the other comedies that Bruce Willis has done on our list, and those have kind of been some of my favorites. So Hudson Hawk, for example, you know, even Look Who's Talking wasn't my favorite, but I enjoyed it more than I thought I would. Mm-hmm. Sunset, Blind Date, like, I enjoyed those movies for their slapstick kind of comedic energy. But those are all, other than Look Who's Talking, obviously, but those are all pretty poor performers at the box office.
Mm-hmm.
And you compare those to other big 90s comedies. Growing up, those didn't really hit as much with me. Like, I'm not a huge Jim Carrey fan. I liked stuff maybe like later in the 90s, but a lot of those other 90s movies I have no desire to go back and rewatch that much of.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of modern comedies that come out that I find funny and witty, and I wonder if maybe it's like there's a style of comedy that you kind of track, and the punny comedies versus the more slapstick comedies that might have been popularized in the mid-90s. I'm not sure. This is just kind of coming to me. I'm just speaking off the cuff here, as it were.
Yeah, no, that's totally fair.
But, like, if you were to write and release North or Hudson Hawk or Blind Date, those kind of movies today, you know, using updated scripts, updated filming techniques, updated actors, I think there's a space for them. Maybe it's just the diversification of our, you know, the internet provides ways for more niche elements to be dispersed versus kind of 30 years ago, you only had the theater and you kind of had to go to your Cineplex and see whatever six movies they were showing.
Mm-hmm.
And if you didn't like, you know, the family movie, well, you just didn't go to the movies that week. Versus today, you can find whatever you want on Netflix, for example. So
yeah, no, I think that's a really good point.
Let's talk about our Star Trek connection. So I had one right off the bat, and I actually didn't do any looking up. I don't know if you did
to see
if there were more that I missed. But Jason Alexander, who plays North's dad in this movie, was in an episode of Voyager. He plays a character named Kuro, something like that, in the episode called Think Tank of Voyager. I remember really liking that movie. So, that like episode. I said, I didn't look up anybody else to see if there's like a another person that I didn't know of. Not a Star Trek connection, but a side comment. Have you finished The Falcon and the Winter Soldier?
I haven't yet.
I was just going to call out, there's a character, there's an actor in this movie that makes a Marvel MCU appearance in The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. It's not Bruce Willis. I would have like pulled the klaxons and the horns earlier if that was the case. But
oh yeah, you would be like, watch The Falcon and the Winter Soldier now. Yeah.
I'm not. I finished it today. The final episode aired today, Friday the 23rd, as we're recording this.
Mm-hmm.
We can maybe have a spoilery bonus episode later to talk about it. But I'm not totally sure what the character that that was introduced does or is, or even what their name is. So again, speaking to my complete lack of comic book knowledge here, but I was just kind of like, well, that's a coincidence. So maybe funny. Someday some people will get this joke.
Maybe I'll get this joke in 2 weeks when I catch up on it.
Oh yeah, there you go.
Speaking of like weird crossovery things, I read in the description of IMDb that apparently this is the lone film appearance of Bern Hartman, the wife of Phil Hartman, who later went on to become most famous for actually murdering Phil Hartman. So,
wow.
Yeah, wild.
Phil Hartman's great. I really loved his work. Who does Bern Hartman play?
She plays the waitress, apparently. So I'm guessing in that one restaurant sequence.
I'm blanking on...
when he goes on the back of the soup truck.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I love how I can say any part of this movie out of context. The audience will be like, soup truck? What the hell?
Yeah.
Yep.
Borscht truck, you mean.
Oh, yes. The borscht truck.
That's one of my favorite Bruce Willis bits, which we'll get to here in just a minute. Before we do that, let's talk box office. So we spoke a little offline, off air, about this. It was hard to determine the exact cost of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, all we know that there is, it was a major loss, major financial loss.
Oh yes,
but the budget. We're unclear exactly. There's ranges kind of given around. I don't know what you found, but Wikipedia just says 50 to 40 million.
Yeah. So 50 to 40 million. And then the budget or the box office was 7.182 million. So this movie lost anywhere from 32.8 million to $42.8 million. And even if it only lost $32 million, it is at this point the biggest Bruce Willis flop out of all of his movies. Beating out Billy Bathgate, even.
So let's talk about the awards it won, and this will lead us into our Bruce Willis discussion. So it was nominated for many a Golden Raspberry.
Mm-hmm.
It was nominated for a Saturn Award. Weirdly enough, for Best Performer by a Young Actor, Elijah Wood.
Mm-hmm.
And the only category, or the only awards it actually won, though, can you guess what they were?
I'm going to guess that they are a raspberry?
Nope, they are the Stinker's Bad Movie Award.
Woo! It's so back!
This movie won Worst Picture, but it also won Worst Actor, Bruce Willis, which I found really shocking.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we could start talking about his role, but I loved him in this movie. I thought he didn't overstay his welcome. He showed up at the right times. He always played kind of a funny character. Like, his character is supposed to be the Guardian Angel-esque character, and he's always just there. He plays the cowhand in Texas. He plays the sleigh driver in Alaska. He plays a beachcomber in Hawaii. He plays the FedEx driver, which I looked up that quote. I'm going to read that. IMDb has the quote
of
the FedEx driver you were referring to, and I was going to read it because It is a very funny quote.
Yep.
If I can get the tab to scroll. So, oh my gosh. Why does IMDb just randomly show quotes? You'd think it always would show the same one.
Did you go to the quotes page?
I found it.
Okay.
I found it. So, North, what are you? Some kind of guardian angel? Narrator, the Bruce Willis character. Well, I guess you could say that, because in manner of speaking, we at Federal Express, Fleer, we are guardians. Guardians of your most important packages and priority communiques. Yeah, I thought that was great. The quotes the quotes page in IMDb is really probably like why, like that's the funniness part of this movie. So my favorite Bruce Willis character is the comedian named Joey Fingers, and North stumbles across. So after he gets chased through the borscht truck and goes to the diner and is covered in borscht and everybody thinks it's blood, he runs out into a dinner that's being that is a comedy show being performed by Bruce Willis, and he's playing a character named Joey Fingers. And the gathering, according to the sign, is something like the National Convention of Smoke Detector Salesmen or something. And he tells like a really bad joke and no one laughs at the punchline until at the end, then he just tacks on until the smoke detector goes off. Or I don't even remember the joke. I just remember being like, what on earth is this? But he has some really great quotes like, a bird in the hand is always greener than the grass under the other guy's bushes. It's a metaphor mainly used by gardeners and landscaping people in general. Like just very silly kind of like, he winks to the camera. Bruce Willis is always winking to the camera, being like, here's a funny joke. And he seems like he's having a blast.
Yeah, he's definitely trying in this movie. Like, he is not half-assing this performance at all. Which, like, I will definitely admit that, like, Bonfire of the Vanities and Look Who's Talking To were total half-ass jobs. He's not really in it. His heart isn't there. But, like, in this movie, you could tell he's in it, and he's excited about it, and he's having a good time, and I like that.
Yeah, it just really bummed me out. Like, as all the problems that I had with this movie, I guess I didn't look it to see what other movies were nominated that year for the Stinkiest Bad Movie Award, but I just... As all the problems, and I feel like I've been pretty hard in this movie so far, people are consistently ranking it as worst movie of the year. And maybe it was just a stellar year for movies, or a bad year for movies. I'm not one or the other, but...
Yeah, and like almost everybody's list of Bruce Willis ranking movies, they rank it pretty much toward the bottom, and I cannot get behind that. I think that Bruce Willis was probably nominated for the worst actor for the Stinkers Bad Movie Awards, probably because he's like one of the main actors and everybody hated this movie apparently. So I think that that's probably why he was nominated for it, but maybe, it's undeserved.
Like, the Alan Arkin character, I thought, while funny, his jokes felt a little more forced.
Yeah.
So I looked at that year, 1994, the Stinkers Bad Movie Award category of worst actor, also nominated was Macaulay Culkin for three movies: Getting Even with Dad, The Pagemaster, and Richie Rich, which all came out that year.
All movies I have seen.
Yeah, Richie Rich, I think, is a worse movie than this. That's a similar style of movie to this, but I think Richie Rich is a much worse movie than this.
Yeah, it's very silly that this movie won the Stinkers Bad Movie Award. Doesn't deserve it. Does not deserve it.
All right. Any other Bruce Willis commentary you have for this role?
No. I just thought he was great overall. I liked him a lot in this movie.
I think if you listener could somehow find clips of just Bruce Willis in performance of this movie, you would enjoy it. Like, go on YouTube, look up just clips of Bruce Willis in North.
Also, the Texas bit is pretty good.
Yeah, the whole Texas bit, the song, Reba McEntire, a delight.
Yeah. All right, So I feel like we're probably going to have pretty different rankings of this movie, but where would you rank this against every other Bruce Willis film?
So I struggled because I'm ranking this above a movie that I gave a Bruce, which, you know,
further enforces.
I gave this movie a Bruck, a B-R-U-C, and I think it's, yeah, further enforcing that our hard science here is a little divergent. But I'm going to put this movie at number 9, so right below Blind Date, right above Striking Distance. Striking Distance was the movie I was referring to.
Okay. Yeah, I'm also putting it right above Striking Distance, but I obviously like Striking Distance a lot more than you did. So I'm putting this at my number 5 film as far as the Bruce Willis movies go. And I think we've said this before, but this is subject to change. It is entirely possible that I will think back on North many moons from now, you know, 49 dinners from now, and go, you know what? North is rated too damn high, and I will lower it. But I don't know.
I think, honestly, the more I thought about it a lot today as we were getting ready for this. The more I thought about it, the more I think I was angry at the potential, because I loved that first 30 minutes so much. And I was like, this is silly. It's going to be funny. I'm going to rank it high. I love this comedy. I love the energy.
Mm-hmm.
And then it went downhill. And I think that if that opening hadn't been so solid, I probably wouldn't have disliked it so much.
Yeah. That's interesting. So you think that you would have rated this higher if the opening had been worse?
I think so. Like, I think if it had been a little less funny in the beginning and just been kind of mediocre all the way through, I would have been like, oh, okay, it was a mediocrely good film. Maybe putting it a little better than half of the movies. So, like, right now, 9 out of 17 films, that's pretty much right in the middle as you can be.
Yeah.
But it was probably in my, like, top 5 in the first 30 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that, but like, I think the big difference is that the kid worked for me. That one kid who I'm,
Winchell
his character worked for me. The weird attorney character worked for me, and he and that attorney character take up a lot of the later half of the movie. And the twist I also saw coming, and it wasn't disappointing to me at all. So I feel like those three things definitely help me put it above where you put it. The other thing I wanted to talk about briefly is, do you think that it actually was a dream in the end? Because he takes out the quarter that has a hole in it from the bullet that Bruce Willis's character put in it. Do you think that he had actually always had that, as the character says? Or do you think that it's possible that this was like a magical occurrence and it did actually happen?
I think using like similar movies of that era, I think what we can kind of say is that Bruce Willis really is some sort of guardian angel, magical, you know, friendly wizard of some kind. And it was a dream. Like, no one else is going to know about what happened other than North. But I think the little like wink at the end means that Bruce Willis is going to disappear into the sunset. You're never going to see him again, but he did his job and taught the kid a lesson. That's kind of what I left with. Also, that kid was weirdly okay with just hopping in some guy who dressed up as Easter Bunny's car and being like, take me home, I just met.
Yeah. Yeah. And like Bruce Willis as the comedian, like changed in front of the kid. I was like, yeah, this is a little weird. Wouldn't do this today. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, but I think that those differences kind of made me rank it where I did and made you rank it where you did, which is interesting. I love having discussions like that. That's why we have this podcast. Totally. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, it's come to that point in time in the podcast where we're going to do one of my favorite activities. Kendrick, do you know what time it is?
Is it time to do the laundry?
It's not. What's your second guess?
Oh, dang. My second guess is probably the Wheel of Willis then.
Oh, okay. Yeah, your second guess is absolutely right. Ding, 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 ding. You won! You've earned a free Willis spin.
Do we have to, Oh, cool. So, like we said earlier, big thanks to everybody who sent in suggestions for the Will Willis. We love them. You can email us. You can tweet at us. We'll take them. One thing I forgot to mention. So we said we got some suggestions. One of the suggestions was sent in by a listener named Katie. She also called out to me that we talked last episode about director cameos, M. Night Shyamalan, Quentin Tarantino, Alfred Hitchcock, and so on and so forth. She called out her favorite, which was Taika Waititi. Is often plays a role in his own work, and it's quite enjoyable. So thanks for that. Shout out. All right, let's spin that wheel.
Sounds good. And what do we say every time we're going to spin the wheel, Kendrick?
I'm actually afraid of one of these days if we don't say it, like, will the wheel not spin?
I don't think that it can. It's voice powered.
Oh, okay. Like our voices, our breath is pushing it around.
Yeah. If you've ever seen like those things where somebody has an extension cord that they've plugged back into itself, or an outlet strip that they've plugged back into itself to get unlimited power. That's what I have happening. I have my mic cord plugging back into my headphone jack. So that's how it's powering my whole computer.
I see. All right. Well, every time, by law now, and by the rule of physics, we have to say,
whisk that wheel. Okay. Do you think this Bruce Willis has the right amount of toes?
Like on his foot?
What other toes are there?
I don't know. Good question.
I was like, are there some other toes that I'm just unaware of?
Yeah. I don't know. His toes, duh. His Texas character probably lost a toe, you know, frostbite or shot it off with his gun or
rattlesnake ate it.
Rattlesnake. Yeah. But otherwise, I think he probably so. What about you?
I don't know. I could see him having no feet at all because, oh no, he does have feet because we saw his feet when he was the like beachcomber. I'm going to say that he probably does have the right amount of toes. That's going to be my hot take on this movie.
All right. I didn't expect this podcast to become like a foot podcast.
Yeah. It's too bad that we didn't have this question last week when we talked about Pulp Fiction. It would have fit right in with all the feet stuff.
All right. Thanks again to everybody who sent those in. Those are such a treat. That's going to do it for this episode of Where There's a Willis, There's a Way. You can follow us on Twitter at WillisWayPod. You can email us, WillisWayPod@gmail.com. You can find all these episodes on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. Please remember to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. We would love it. That's how podcasts become grown-up podcasts, is they grow on Apple Podcasts. I don't know if you knew that, Josh, but
yeah, so. I did. I went to school. Duh.
Okay. Yeah, I was homeschooled, so some of that was kind of loosely taught. You can find me on Twitter at kmartinix, kmartinix.
And you can find me on Twitter at Joshing Carter. Join us next week where we cover a critically acclaimed, not so much, nope, another Bruce Willis movie.
Fan acclaimed?
Not so much. I don't know. I know nothing about this movie, so I'm excited to talk about it. But we're going to be covering the movie Color of Night. Until then, have a great week. We'll see you guys later. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, everybody.
Goodbye.